Chapter 13. Multiculturalism in Medicine, Ethical Issues. Magdalena Kuczynska, Pomeranian Medical University in Szczecin, Poland. All Real Living is Meeting, Martin Buber. Subchapter 1. Introduction. The term culture can be applied to both social groups and the individuals who make them up. The culture of a society consists of, among other things, language, collective systems of beliefs, convictions, views, values, norms, rituals, as well as knowledge, art, and law. A person who is a member of a social group co-creates collective culture while simultaneously drawing from it. Moreover, they bring their individual cultural resources, such as race, gender, age, sexual orientation, personal value hierarchy, and worldview, into it. This understanding of culture creates a space for the development of two polarized social structures, monoculture and multiculturalism. In the content presented below, the reader's attention is directed towards multiculturalism in a moral context. Every encounter with another person is a confrontation with their distinct culture in its multifaceted understanding. The process of engaging with the material presented in the chapter can take two forms. 1. A non-reflective, and therefore less impactful, engagement with the theoretical material. Or 2. An active assimilation of the material with a deep sense of its practical dimension, which is strongly recommended. The learning process is more effective when the student is convinced that the knowledge being acquired will be useful in practice. So where can we find multicultural interpersonal relationships in the field of medicine? Students who are the intended readers of this book live in various parts of the world. Among them are countries with complex social structures that host numerous cultures. These readers may find it easier to place the content of this chapter within their daily lives, which are saturated with encounters with multiculturalism, in a narrower sense, referring primarily to nationality, religion, origin, and sexual orientation. In a somewhat different situation, it might seem at first glance, are readers living in countries that are not particularly common destinations for immigration, and, therefore, are characterized by relatively homogeneous manifestations of social culture. However, multiculturalism definitely extends beyond this narrow understanding. As mentioned in the beginning of the chapter, each person possesses a set of cultural components that are unique to them. Some of them are permanent, like gender, while others are constantly changing, like age. This is the first basic piece of knowledge that the reader should take away from this chapter. We should not look for multiculturalism only in its narrow sense. For example, a patient is a tourist from a culturally different part of the world. Every encounter with another person is an encounter with their distinct culture in a multifaceted understanding. Moving to the core of the chapter, two essential questions must be posed. Which values and moral norms contribute to the formation of a pro-social attitude towards cultural diversity? Why can implementing the proposed values and moral norms help optimize functioning in the medical environment in the context of multiculturalism, while respecting one's own cultural distinctiveness? Aims. Through this chapter, students will enhance their attitudes, knowledge, and skills and will be able to characterize the terminology used in the text in its general meaning. To contextualize the aforementioned terminology within the framework of multiculturalism in medicine and to justify its relevance to the discussed topic. To present proposals for individual and group exercises aimed at supporting the development of an open attitude towards multiculturalism in medicine while respecting one's own value system. The author of the chapter is aware that the values and moral principles that seem appropriate for the creation of a multicultural community represent an exceptionally broad spectrum. The material presented neither exhausts this spectrum nor claims to do so. Furthermore, the terms used in the text, mostly from the fields of philosophy and ethics, and their placement in the multicultural medical environment, also remain open-ended and unfinished. The author's intent and scientific educational desire are to initiate the reader's own reflection on the moral dimension of encounters with others and their cultural richness, regardless of their assigned social role. Ultimately, these encounters will take place in the individual IU space. The reference to the philosophy of dialogue is used consciously and purposefully. Undoubtedly, the message of the chapter is also to motivate the reader to engage in a broader discussion on the emerging moral dilemmas at the intersection of many cultures in the field of medicine. We are convinced that to some extent, the exercises proposed in the final part of the chapter will contribute to this. Three components of moral attitude. Cognitive, consists of thoughts, beliefs, and knowledge about the object of the attitude. Affective, refers to the emotions felt towards the object of the attitude. Behavioral, refers to the behaviors presented towards the object of the attitude. Learning outcomes. By the end of this chapter, readers will be able to characterize the terms discussed in the chapter, human dignity and tolerance. Demonstrate the application of the terminology presented in point 1 in the context of multiculturalism in medicine. Show awareness of morally unacceptable attitudes in the context of multiculturalism in medicine. Demonstrate internal coherence between the three components of attitude, cognitive, effective, and behavioral, in relation to multicultural relationships in medicine. Relevant definitions and terms. Introducing the topic of ethics in multiculturalism requires defining the necessary terminology in its general sense. To begin, I will address some fundamental concepts. This subchapter will focus on the notions of human dignity and tolerance. Before the reader delves into the terminology rooted primarily in philosophy and ethics, it is important to note a significant limitation applied in the text. The attempt to define the concepts below had to be done succinctly enough so that the reader would not get lost in the maze of philosophical debates. Instead, the goal was for the reader to master the terms in such a way that they form a clear framework for the practical part, which will primarily involve any relationship in the medical environment. This necessitated an authoritative choice of certain philosophical trends and the definitions developed within them. The individual worldview preferences of the author played no role in this selection. The only criterion was the appropriateness of the presented definitions for the leading topic, which is multiculturalism in medicine. Human dignity. The term dignity was introduced by Cicero. In its original meaning, it referred to ethical and aesthetic values such as beauty and attractiveness. Being a person of dignity meant someone who exhibited beauty through their demeanor. Over time, the term dignity began to be used, for example, in the Polish language, as a synonym for the word surname. It acquires yet another meaning in statements like, "I have a sense of dignity," referring to our internal respect for ourselves. From the perspective of the book's main theme, we place particular emphasis on an internal human quality, dignity. What is its nature? Does every person possess it? And if so, what is its source? And perhaps the most compelling question, what does it mean in practical terms for your dignity, my dignity, and everyone's? Does this concept impose any mutual obligations on us? Each of these short questions has been the subject of countless reflections in philosophy, religion, law, psychology, and sociology. Some of them are positioned at two opposite extremes. Legal concepts can significantly differ regarding the recognition of specific attributes of human dignity. What is certain is that the terms human dignity, dignity of the human being, or following the personalist philosophy, dignity of the human person, are simultaneously very general, highly complex, and even controversial. I will therefore focus on the most important content from the perspective of the topic. Due to the diversity of philosophical ethical views and the need for clarity in the text, the following interpretation of human dignity is largely based on the personalist school mentioned above. Characteristics of human dignity: inalienability, inviolability, non-gradability, non-transference. This means that a person is born with the dignity that belongs to them, which they do not need to earn, and neither they nor anyone else can take it away. It is not gradable. One cannot have more or less human dignity. Human dignity is inviolable. It must be respected and protected. Charter of Fundamental Rights of the European Union 2000. Does every person have dignity? What is its source? The answer to the first question is simple. Yes, being human is synonymous with being endowed with dignity, understood in the sense discussed here. The second issue has a wide variety of arguments. Here are some of them. Human dignity stems from the attribute of rationality and free will. This interpretation was supported by, among others, Immanuel Kant. A person is created in the image of God. and this constitutes the source of their dignity. This concept, as one might expect, is propagated by those who practice philosophy within a religious framework. The human capacity for reflection and moral choices. The ability to work and thus shape the surrounding reality in a purposeful and conscious way makes a person worthy. Human dignity. From theory to practice. Accepting the fact that we possess inborn and inalienable dignity leads to reflection. How does this philosophical, abstract concept translate into social relationships and the norms that shape them? One of the most important consequences is the connection between the awareness of human dignity and the codification of rights inherent to it, such as the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, or patient rights present in many countries. Unfortunately, the history of humanity reveals numerous examples of violations of human dignity every day. International conflicts, internal disputes, and family quarrels are behaviors that people in every corner of the world must confront. What additional condition is, therefore, necessary in building the attitudes mentioned? At this point, I will refer to Lawrence Kohlberg's theory of moral development. In his years of research, he observed different stages of a person's maturation in response to the world of values. For the topic of this chapter, the following conclusions from Kohlberg are important. At a certain stage, a person realizes moral values as long as they are justified by the applicable law. Returning to the main issue, individuals whose moral development is at the law and order level will respect human dignity, provided it is regulated by legal order. However, life cannot be contained within the confines of law. Even the most precise legislations do not resolve all social situations. This is where the second key conclusion from Kohlberg's research comes into play. The highest stage of moral development is respecting moral values because of the inherent good present in them. Yes, this may sound overly philosophical. Therefore, an example of how Kohlberg's theory can be applied in practice is presented in the box below. Situation: a senior customer enters the store. She hands her entire wallet to the cashier, asking her to choose the money for the purchases. The saleswoman, taking advantage of the senior's trust, has the opportunity to pocket even a small amount. She does not do so. We are interested in answering the following question. What is her motivation for the morally correct action? Answer 1. The saleswoman refrains from stealing because she knows that the law prohibits it, and violating the law could result in serious consequences. Answer 2. The saleswoman refrains from stealing because she has an internal conviction that the act is morally wrong, that it causes harm to another person. According to Kohlberg, this reasoning represents the highest level of moral maturity. Thus, the awareness of another person's dignity can be considered an important regulator of interpersonal relationships. The question remains whether being equipped with dignity simply because of belonging to the human species is enough to expect respect. Should this trait not be complemented by the necessity of behaving decently? The view that this is indeed the case seems reasonable. And here we arrive at an important observation worth internalizing. If I acknowledge that I possess dignity, I should act morally correctly, which, among other things, means respecting the dignity of others. Isn't this the ideal way to establish open relationships in a multicultural dimension? We will return to this idea in the next subchapter. Tolerance. One of the most demanding moral ideas. Difficult to implement, yet fundamental to ethics in a multicultural world. Understanding the criteria of tolerance and its limitations would help build a world free of tensions in interpersonal and intercultural relationships. Let us briefly discuss the mentioned criteria. The foundation of tolerance lies in certain behaviors worth remembering. Here they are. 1. There exists a factor, attitude, or behavior in our surrounding environment that causes me opposition, and it may even be in conflict with my hierarchy of values. 2. I have the possibility to act against this phenomenon. I may try to change the existing state of affairs through force, persuasion, or spreading false information. 3. I refrain from acting to the detriment of the phenomenon mentioned in point 2. This understanding of tolerance is called negative tolerance in ethics. Negative because it expresses a lack, in this context, the lack of our destructive reaction to someone else's attitude or views. It is the minimum moral obligation we must adhere to. At the same time, the idea of tolerance is a claim-based idea. I show tolerance towards you, but you show tolerance towards me. There is also the concept of positive tolerance. This attitude takes a significant step forward by adding the last criterion, which is best captured by Voltaire's statement. I disapprove of what you say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it. Positive tolerance is not just refraining from acting against the phenomenon mentioned in point one. It involves actively supporting it with respect for the equality of all people. This occurs within the boundaries of tolerance, which will be discussed shortly. The literature on the topic points to several sources justifying the existence of tolerance, but their discussion lies beyond the scope of this chapter. Undoubtedly, one of the most important values upon which tolerance is based is human dignity and the equality of all people derived from it, understood in a moral context. Tolerance has its limits. Otherwise, it would require openness to antisocial attitudes. We strongly oppose this idea. It must be clearly stated that tolerance should only be applied to attitudes, views, and behaviors that fall within the legal, moral, and political boundaries. It is also important to emphasize that tolerance, as a moral stance, is not the same as acceptance. We may accept differing views, even sympathize with them, but we are not required to. As mentioned earlier, tolerance constitutes the moral minimum in the interest of a multicultural world. Subchapter 2, Human Dignity as the Supreme Value in Multicultural Relations in Medicine. In Section 13.1, we entered the world of two philosophical and ethical concepts in their general meaning. Now, we will try to place them within the context of multiculturalism in medicine, in relation to practices concerning patients, their families, and in employee relations. The goal of sections 1.5 and 1.6 is to search for an answer to the question, can respect for human dignity and openness to the phenomenon of tolerance support pro-social attitudes in a multicultural medical environment? Patient dignity is the dignity of a person filled with fear for their life and health. It is the dignity of those close to them, worried about entrusting their loved one to the hands of nurses, midwives, doctors, physiotherapists, and paramedics. Finally, it is the dignity of the people with whom we share the struggles and joys of long shifts. Every participant in this relationship brings their cultural background to it. This is nothing unusual, as everyday relationships we experience in public spaces are also characterized by this. So, what makes the medical field so special that it is worth, as the authors of this handbook have done, focusing on the meaning of human dignity as a fundamental value in this specific area of medicine within the context of cultural diversity? The view on which we based Section 13.1 assumes that dignity is considered a characteristic inherent to each of us. It does not depend on race, gender, sexual orientation, financial status, or age. Moreover, such an understanding of innate and inalienable dignity requires us to recognize it even in people who have committed morally unjust acts. However, it is important to emphasize the word in people, not in their actions, which deserve appropriate condemnation and punishment according to their wrongdoing. Let's return now to the sentence from the introduction to this chapter. Every encounter with another person is an encounter with their distinct culture in a multifaceted understanding. Thus, when I engage with you in all your cultural richness, I am also confronted with both your and my human dignity. I, a representative of the medical world, and you, a patient, a family member, a loved one. You, my colleague at work. So, what is the most important outcome of this meeting? It is the feeling of human equality within the basic value of dignity. If we accept this conclusion with genuine and deep understanding, we will realize that from the moment we meet another person, we begin to build our relationship on one strong foundation. The various factors arising from cultural diversity only enrich the relationships we create. Let's try to visualize this thought. We have a square on which we can place various buildings. This square is a metaphor for our professional life. The buildings represent every person who appears in this life. We can place each of them only on their designated foundation with the surrounding piece of sidewalk. However, there is a risk that moving from one building to another, we will encounter gaps and unevenness that have formed between them. They are, after all, very diverse, just like our patients and colleagues, Some are calm, others more prone to intense emotions. Some are healthier and happier, others are dying and depressed. Some are young and full of life, while others are seniors, often terrified by the prospect of illness and frailty. There are also those who can communicate easily in our native language, and others with whom communication will be very difficult. Such a constructed square would, over time, become a collection of random buildings, creating a hazard for the passerby moving between them. However, if we begin our work with the concept of unity and human equality, based on the foundation of human dignity, we will start building this metaphorical square by placing a single, strong foundation. The multiculturalism of every person we meet in our professional life will make our square colorful, beautiful, and rich. Viewing another person from the perspective of their dignity offers the chance to build morally correct relationships from the very foundation, thus promoting good quality of life for patients, their dignified dying, or, in relation to colleagues, a favorable atmosphere in the workplace. Every encounter with another person is a confrontation with their distinct culture in its multifaceted understanding. Every individual is characterized by innate and inalienable human dignity. Therefore, every encounter with another person is an engagement with the human dignity that belongs to them. We also mentioned earlier that the relationship with another person becomes a starting point for reflection on the dignity that I myself am endowed with. It obliges me to respect my own rights and myself. And although from the first day of studies we embrace the idea of salus aegroti suprema lex esto, let us make the patient the center of our care while simultaneously and proportionally expecting respect for ourselves and the culture we bring. Our age, gender, nationality, and other cultural variables demand the same protection and respect from the patient, family, and colleagues as they expect from us. Subchapter 3: Tolerance and Multiculturalism in Medicine. We already know from section 13.1 what the term tolerance means. This attitude plays a key role in multicultural medicine. When facing people who bring with them their world of culture, whether they are patients experiencing illness or we are concerned with optimal therapy, every even fleeting interaction is an opportunity to demonstrate a tolerant attitude. The more culturally diverse the groups we encounter in our work, the more difficult this becomes. It requires us to restrain from expressing opposition to differences. Let's provide an example. We have started working in a country where the customs associated with saying goodbye to the deceased differ greatly from those we grew up with. The behavior of the deceased's relatives may seem strange or irritating to us. It may also disrupt our established work schedule. At the same time, we know that the rituals performed by the family at the bedside of the deceased stem from the family's long-standing cultural tradition. We also know that the hospital fully allows these rituals. What attitude will we take? Will we, with a glance or gesture, show impatience, dislike, intolerance? Or, even if we continue to feel confused and angry, will we refrain from even the smallest gestures of opposition? Or perhaps we will go a step further, embracing positive tolerance, creating an environment that actively supports the family? The dignity of patients, their world, the dignity of our colleagues, and our own are the backdrop for tolerance that harmonizes multicultural relationships, even in medicine. One of the most frequently cited examples from medicine, which allows medical personnel to demonstrate a tolerant attitude, is the refusal of a blood transfusion by Jehovah's Witnesses. In the practical section of the chapter, there is an exercise prepared for the reader on this topic. Subchapter 4: Three Components of Moral Attitude in Relation to Multiculturalism in Medicine. One of the objectives of this chapter is to foster an open attitude towards multiculturalism in medicine, while simultaneously respecting one's own world of values. Three components of moral attitude have been identified: cognitive, affective, and behavioral. Let's elaborate on this thought. Earlier, we discussed fundamental values such as dignity and tolerance. These have been treated as the foundation for building good relationships with others. However, simply respecting dignity, which is expressed through tolerance, does not equip us with sufficient competencies to develop a pro-social moral attitude in the context of multiculturalism in medicine. Why is this belief held? The answer lies in the fact that working at the intersection of two vast and multifaceted areas, multiculturalism and medicine, poses a tremendous challenge. the diversity of configurations between them is practically infinite. Therapy directed at the patient and considered in the context of respect for multiculturalism absolutely requires, on the one hand, medical knowledge, and, on the other, an understanding of the customs, practices, and norms regulating the culture of the person entrusted to our care. No one belongs solely to one cultural identity, such as gender. We are subject to intersectionality, identifying simultaneously with many characteristics, as discussed in the introductory part of the chapter. For instance, a young woman giving birth in her home country, among people who know and share her cultural norms, will have different reactions compared to a woman giving birth among medical staff with different cultural patterns, who is also in a non-heteronormative partnership. A single mother giving birth will be in yet another position. To provide comprehensive care to a patient, which necessarily includes our moral dignity, it is essential to constantly work on building the cognitive component. While recognizing dignity in another person is the starting point for forming this attitude, continuously gaining knowledge about them enables us to cultivate appropriate emotions towards them. The situations we encounter in medicine are, not coincidentally, the basis for numerous popular television shows set in hospital settings, such as ER, Grey's Anatomy, or Dr. House. The everyday dramas of human life, unexpected twists, joy interspersed with sadness, hope, and its end, the exhaustion of nurses, midwives, doctors, and paramedics, a conglomerate of emotions at the highest level of feeling. It is so easy to lose empathy within this. Now, let's layer on these fast lanes the additional variables arising from our multiculturalism. Merely respecting the dignity of another person will not suffice. Working based on emotions without a foundation of knowledge may be detrimental to all parties involved. By understanding the cultural sources of human behavior, it is much easier to strengthen positive emotions in ourselves and suppress negative ones. Understanding why our patient, their loved ones, and our colleagues behave in a certain way, and being aware of the significance it holds for the culture with which they identify, will serve as guideposts in the tangled maze of paths. Both the cognitive and affective components will form the basis for the main manifestation of our work. Behavior expressed through action. Equipped with knowledge, I understand others. Understanding means opening myself up to positive emotions towards others. Equipped with knowledge and fueled by good emotions, I proceed to act. The ethics of multiculturalism in medicine condensed in a nutshell, as it often is with medications. After all, the moral attitude with which we enter the world of medicine should be like the best medicine, not a poison made from a mix of ignorance, harmful emotions, and intolerance. Subchapter 5. Conclusions. We have collectively gone through the theory, which provides only modest foundations for the ethics of multiculturalism in medicine. As mentioned in the introduction, this topic has certainly not been fully explored. We would venture to say that it has only been very briefly signaled. The contents of the chapter were intended to serve the Socratic role of a gadfly, provoking thought. Perhaps they will even evoke opposition or rebellion in some readers. If that happens, it is good. Because the most important thing from the perspective of our culturally rich patients, their loved ones, our colleagues, and ourselves, is to engage in reflection on the ethical foundations of human and intercultural relationships. It is impossible, in conclusion, not to mention the existence of difficult, morally conflicting situations generated at the intersection of different cultural expressions. These situations cannot be avoided. It is also impossible to provide a ready-made solution that would be beneficial to all parties involved in the conflict. Sometimes, it is not even feasible. Surely, many examples of seemingly hopeless situations, characteristic of one's country, workplace, or culture, come to mind for the reader. However, in order not to leave the reader in a complete void regarding proposed solutions to moral problems within the context of multiculturalism in medicine, we suggest always grounding the alternatives discussed in the values mentioned in the concluding chapter. Human dignity, tolerance, moral maturity at a high level, and a solid dose of knowledge. Final reflection. Ethics of Multiculturalism in Medicine and the Empower Model by Maugerzada Shkup. This chapter addresses key questions about which moral values foster an open attitude toward cultural diversity in medicine. It places strong emphasis on the concepts of human dignity, tolerance, and moral maturity, all of which resonate deeply with the Empower model, particularly its pillars of multiculturalism, professionalism, wellness, and education resources. The author highlights that every interaction in the medical setting with a patient, a family member, or a colleague is simultaneously an encounter with a unique cultural identity, and thus with that person's inherent dignity. This perspective fully supports Empower's vision of holistic, empathetic, person-centered care. Importantly, tolerance is not framed as passive acceptance, but as an intentional ethical restraint from harmful reactions, a moral minimum expected from professionals working in multicultural environments. The chapter also introduces a model of moral attitude based on three components: cognitive, emotional, and behavioral. This structure mirrors Empower's focus on reflective, informed, and compassionate action, grounded in knowledge and guided by ethical awareness. In summary, this chapter strongly reinforces the implementation of the Empower model in practice. It demonstrates that ethical intercultural competence is not merely a set of skills, but a deep value-based stance rooted in respect, maturity, and meaningful IU relationships, in the spirit of dialogical philosophy and Empower's core principles.